Hello, and welcome back to the Paranormal Podcast. My name is Dan Pacella, co-founder, lead investigator for Orange County, New York Paranormal. Those of you who are back with us, thank you for joining us. If you're new to the festivities, whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on, please subscribe, rate, and review. We have new episodes every other week. There is also a video version of this podcast on our Facebook page and our YouTube channel. So subscribe, follow, and like us on Facebook, and subscribe on YouTube if you like. And make sure to ring the bell on YouTube, because that will give you notifications for all of our videos that come out, not just the podcasts, but also our investigation videos. We publish all our investigations, much like the one that just came out a couple days ago that we're going to talk about on the second half of today's episode. So, how's your October going? We're having a great October. We've had some really fun events that we've done this month at Hyde Hall and at a Grapevine Farms, and we have some more coming up second half of the month. It's October's a ton of fun for us because we get to meet so many new people. We have a lot of folks who come to our events every year, but we're always meeting new people. And one of the biggest surprises along the way of this journey of ours has not necessarily been the spirits we've met, but the living folks we've met. And it's always interesting to hear people's experiences and to also put new folks into locations that we know the history of, but it's nice to have some new folks exposed to it, because you never know what a different person or a different environment will bring out. So we are having a ton of fun this month. But October is also interesting because, you know, as I said, we're meeting all these new people. And we get asked a question over and over again. And I figured that this was the perfect time to talk about this, because we get asked all the time, what are the scariest moments that we have had during our investigations? And I get it. It's October. People love to be scared. And, you know, one of the things we talk about at our events is, you know, this is not a fun house. This is not a corn maze. If you want to be afraid, go to something like that. What we try to emulate is an actual real paranormal investigation that, frankly, most investigators, I don't think, find particularly scary in the moment. Personally, the closest I ever get to afraid is when I'm watching the footage in my office and something really creepy happens that would have been right next to my head. That's when I go, ooh, that was a little weird. I'm almost glad I didn't hear that in the moment. But that being said, there still are moments where there's startles or scares that happen that stay with us. And because we get that question a lot, because it's the season for that scary stuff, today we are going to talk about some of the moments during our investigations and adventures that have been the scariest. The place that probably makes the most sense to start that conversation is one of the rarest things that happens, and that is seeing a full body apparition. We are not psychic mediums. We don't have a psychic medium. We are a quote-unquote scientific-based paranormal group, so all we use is equipment. So we're not gifted or cursed in any particular way. So full body apparitions are even rarer for us, because it has to actually physically manifest, and we actually have to be physically facing it when it manifests in order for that to happen. In all of our 70-plus investigations that we've done, Emily has not seen a full-body apparition. I have seen two, both in a prison, weirdly. The first one was in Burlington County Prison in New Jersey, which we've talked about a lot on the podcast, because that's the night that Emily got pushed down the stairs by an unseen force. We'll do an episode about that one day. But earlier in the night, we were just walking around the cells and doing what you do and asking questions and trying to find the energy. And I turned, looked down a hallway, and a white figure just disappeared around the corner into a cell. And I ran after it. Nothing was there. And later on, it was interesting because one of the pieces of equipment we had said that I saw a white man, which it was an all-white figure, like a bright white kind of glow. And then the other time was at the Museum of Wayne County History. Oddly, after an event, we were walking past, Margo and I were walking past the cells, and I saw what I thought was an event attendee sitting inside one of the cells, you know, still doing something. And I actually turned back after I saw them out of the corner of my eye to ask if they needed anything. And there was nobody there. And those are the two instances where I've seen a full body apparition. At least I think I know what I saw. I really don't like when people say, I know what I saw, because no, you didn't. Nobody really, you don't really know what you saw. I think I know what I saw, and I'm pretty confident in those two experiences. But it's interesting because as scary as you might think that would be, in the moment, it's more fascinating. It's a weird kind of sensation. And if you've had this sensation, in your review of the podcast, leave a comment or something explaining it. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, please let us know if you've seen a full body apparition, what your feeling was, because in the moment, everything kind of freezes and it's weird. Time almost seems to slow down, because you're trying to contemplate what you just saw or what you just think you saw, thought you saw. And, you know, you're trying to think, okay, what could that have been? Is that somebody I know? Is there somebody sitting there? What just happened? And it really doesn't hit you until later, the significance of what you've seen and the rarity of what you've seen. We have thousands and thousands of hours of video footage, and we've never captured a full body apparition. They're that rare. I wanted to start with that one, though, because yes, it's more in the retrospect that it's a little bit eerie or frightening or creepy. But in the moment, it's such a fascinating occurrence that it actually, in my opinion, doesn't qualify for what we're talking about today, which are genuine moments of being startled or scared during a paranormal investigation. However, I felt it was worth bringing up. As for the moments that actually I feel qualify for this kind of thing, you never forget your first time. And the first time I really had a moment of just feeling really uncomfortable in a place, like you walk into a place and you feel like you shouldn't be there. You have that fight or flight feeling. And the first time that actually happened was in room 217 at the Worcester Inn. The Worcester Inn, very interesting location. The first location that actually took what we were trying to do seriously. Jim Bulow, the owner, may he rest in peace, really has a huge, huge influence on what we've become based on him believing in us. And the first night we were there, we had rented out room 307, which was notoriously a haunted room. And we were having dinner and he just gave us the keys to some of the other haunted rooms. And 217 had a very unusual story behind it and a very unusual piece of evidence where apparently a group had caught the door opening and like a something sticking its head out that looked like an animal, but I never saw the footage. Jim just explained it to us, and I've never seen this footage. He lost the footage, so I have no idea. Jim believed what he saw, I will say that. But nevertheless, so this room had a reputation, is my point. So the first night, you know, Emily's doing the work in 307. I'm like, you know, let me go down, do 216, 217. And 217, that was a scary room. There was a feeling in there of just, you know what, you shouldn't be here right now. And you are not welcome here. And it's interesting, I hadn't quite gotten really good at filming rooms yet, or at least knowing where the camera was. Because when we investigate, we do try to stay in the frame of the camera, because it with us, if you don't catch it on camera, we don't claim it as something that actually happened, or, you know, we don't put it in a video because we have to have proof of it. So now, as a group, we've all gotten pretty good at just being aware of where the cameras are. Well, I wasn't at the time. I just wanted to get out of there. Like, I just felt like, man, whatever's here doesn't want me here. And I never felt in danger, but it's funny, if you look at the footage, I kind of back out of the frame. I'm actually backing up against the wall, which is something that's pretty common for when you're feeling threatened or when you're feeling, I've said it before, I'll say it, fight or flight. That's the feeling. You get that. I've had that feeling several times over the years But that was really the first time. And that room, no one ever really stayed in there that felt comfortable. And what's interesting is at one point before Jim passed away in 2020, the key to that room had gotten lost and there was not a backup. Every key to that room had gotten misplaced. And for the last 6 months of that inn's existence, that room was not accessible. You can argue one way or another whether there's paranormal reasons that the key went missing. I tend to feel somebody just misplaced it because I don't have proof of the other. But that was that moment in time where you have that very real. If you've ever like been somewhere you knew you shouldn't be, that's the kind of feeling I'm talking about. And it doesn't seem as dramatic as seeing a full body apparition, which I find more fascinating than scary. That moment is one that it sticks with you because of that feeling of just, ooh, this isn't where I should be. Something I can't see doesn't want me here. And I mean, I stood my ground. I do what I tell other folks to do, stand your ground as long as you feel like you're not gonna get to any physical harm. And I think I stayed in there about 25, 30 minutes. And what's interesting is I didn't have that feeling as strongly in other times that I went in there, but that room 217 Worcester Inn, that fight or flight feeling, was the first time I ever was like, wow, that's a thing. You can really, really be uncomfortable in a place. And at the time, yeah, it was a little scary at the time. Now I look back on it as a learning experience, but at the time, it was definitely a scary moment and probably the first scary moment I had in terms of being alone in a place that didn't want me there. This second one is a little strange. But I, to this day, will say it is the most startled I have been in an investigation. And it's startling because it just came out of absolutely nowhere. And that's how paranormal energy works. Sometimes, you know, one thing we say at all the events we do is, look, nothing happening is normal. But when it happens, it happens. And this happened. Grapevine Farms, a location we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show here. The first time we were there, and we have video, this is in the video of it. So if you go back to our 2019 investigation on our YouTube channel or Facebook page, you'll find this video, the footage is there. I'm sitting on the floor in the upstairs hallway because there are children's spirits in that hallway. I was trying to interact with them, trying to play with them. We had brought toys and all that. So as I'm sitting there, I have my hand flat on the floor. And all of a sudden, I just jump. My hand goes, whoa, and I jump. And when that stuff happens, I tend to be in processing mode. So, and it frustrates Emily, my wife and co-founder, to no end that I don't immediately vocalize what it was. Like, I'm trying to process. I'm trying to find an answer. I'm trying to make it make sense. What happened was I felt a dog lick my hand. And I know that sounds strange, but having owned dogs for the last 20 years, I know what that feels like. If you have a pet, you know what a dog licking your hand feels like. You know what a cat nuzzling up against you feels like. These things, even though all pets are different, those things are universal. You know what they feel like. And it was weird. I explained it at the time as like, I don't know what that was, but I felt a dog lick my hand. And I nearly jumped through the ceiling because, frankly, that's the last thing you're expecting. I don't mind getting my shirt tugged. I don't mind feeling a cold spot on my hand or on my back of my neck or on my head. But you don't expect a dog to lick you, especially when there's not a dog there. So fast forward to the next day. We get a phone call from Tim. Now, we didn't know Tim and Tracy at that point. I mean, they investigate with us now all the time, but that was our first night there. And Tim had joined us, as he does with groups who are coming in, especially for the first time. And Tracy was not feeling well, so she did not. Now, they live on that property, so she was in the building, just not in the investigation and the section of the building we were investigating. They had recently had one of their beloved pets pass away, and Tracy just sort of on a limb just said out loud, And Tim called us and said, Tracy in bed last night said, hey, you know, named the pet and said, if you're here, go scare them. And when we asked what time that question was asked, it was asked about 2 minutes before I was my hand felt the licking sensation. And that was startling. I'm not too proud to tell you that. I almost jumped through the ceiling because that is not what you expect. I've become way more stoic about things now. Like, you know, we joke, I don't react to much of anything. I still think that would get a rise out of me 4 years later, because that's just something you're never prepared for. And it happened the one time, and it has not happened again since. And I've brought dog treats and dog toys, and we have tried so hard to recreate the scenario where that occurred, and we just have had no luck. But man, it only happened once, but man, the one time it happened was very scary and it's very, very memorable. So those are the two scariest moments during our investigations for me personally that stick out. One of these days we'll get some of the other folks who investigate with us on, maybe to share some of theirs, because we've all had our moments. If you've ever done anything with the paranormal, you have your moments. And please feel free to share your moment with us in the comments section or in the review on the podcast. I'd love to hear them. But something that that I want to talk about also is some of the scariest moments are actually the self-inflicted ones. I've talked to other investigators, and I think this is true for every paranormal group in the world. Sometimes we just scare the hell out of each other by accident. And the best example of this is from our Omen Theater investigation we did earlier in the year, when Margo almost gave me a heart attack. We were up in the balcony, and I went into the projection room to see if they're, you know, just, first of all, it's an old timey theater projection room. How cool is that? But secondly, I want to just get a feel for it, see if there's any energy going on, see if I could, you know, find anything. You try to investigate every square foot you can. And so we do that. And it's loud because the projectors take a long time to cool down. And it's an operating business, so we investigate it after they close. So it didn't contaminate any of the other cameras, but you weren't going to, the audio evidence chance in there was not good, but I still wanted to go in. Well, because it's loud, I couldn't hear Margo walking up behind me to tell me she was going to go down to the main level. And she walked up to me. I didn't know she was there. And the last thing you expect, remember, I talked about full body apparitions earlier. You don't expect to see somebody when you turn around, and generally we communicate, or generally we hear each other walking. But Margo and I, it didn't compute that the projection room was so loud that I couldn't hear her. And I turned around and she was about 2 feet from my face. And I thought I was gonna have a heart attack. You just don't expect to see a person there. And when you investigate, your senses are on full alert all the time. So it, you know, when you turn around and you see somebody just standing there, whether you know them or not, your initial reaction is, oh my goodness. And that's what that was. And that took me about 10 minutes to actually stop like laughing at myself, because again, you know, when you do this, you should have fun. I think our field can take itself way too seriously sometimes, so we therefore try not to take ourselves too seriously. But you can have a self-inflicted scare with each other in the group, and this has happened quite a few times over the years, usually with folks who are newer to it. Like it happened with Tim and Tracy early on, Rhea and Margo again early on. But I think once you investigate with someone a while, you kind of get a feel for where they are and what they're doing, and then you become like a tandem. But oh my goodness, Margo scared the heck out of me, and it was a startling moment, but it was a self-inflicted startling moment because of just not expecting to see her there, not hearing her walk up. The conditions made it honestly one of the scariest things, just because as I said, you aren't expecting it. And Whoa, man, did I jump. I wish we'd caught it on camera. I would have put it in the episode. I don't mind showing you all the human side of what we do, but I didn't have a good camera angle on it. So we didn't get to see that, which probably in the long run makes me look better. So having spent a lot of time during events talking about some of those scary moments, I thought I would come on today and share them with you. And there are others. I think the most terrifying thing that ever happened to us was my wife getting pushed down the stairs at the Burlington County Prison. I didn't talk about that one in this episode because I actually want to have her talk about that in a future episode, because that was really, really a startling and sobering experience that I'm not able to discuss because it happened to her. So that would top this list if she were in today's episode, but we'll talk about that one separately because it deserves to be talked about separately. There are a lot of facets to that particular incident that are worth diving into, and it's a really good lesson in observing cause and effect. So that was terrifying. Not included today because I want to have her on to discuss that, but that's just a couple, like I said, just a couple of examples of some of the startling and scary moments, scariest moments we've had. There are little things that happen, but you know, in terms of the paranormal, the two I mentioned earlier are the best two examples. So we had another investigation video come out. I wanted to do a bit of a deep dive into that. If you haven't seen the latest investigation we've done at Grapevine Farms, I will put a link at the end screen. Spoiler alert, I guess, if you want to watch it first, go right ahead. But Grapevine Farms is just such a great location. And we've investigated there. It's in the double digits now, how often we've been there. And it's not just because Tim and Tracy have become good friends of ours and have become fellow investigators that join us. It's also because the spirits there are so fascinating, and it's such a unique location, and there's such a wide variety of complexity and spirit interrelationships, and it's a treasure trove of paranormal activity. I say by square foot, it's the most haunted place we go. What makes it incredibly unique is the fact that all the spirits there, they're all seemingly aware of each other. And that's really rare, because most of the time, when you go to a haunted location, spirits did not most of the time pass away at the same time. They passed away at different times. And a lot of times they tend to stay in their lane as far as spiritual realm goes. Like, they don't really interact with each other a lot. It happens, but at Grapevine, they talk about each other. The children in the hall tell me I shouldn't go into David's room. People, the folks in the wine cellar will ask about Michael, who's the young boy who lives in one side of the basement that we capture evidence about all the time. It's a very unusual location in that regard. And you can watch, I mean, we've published every investigation. You can go back and watch all, you know, 10 of them or however how many there are, and see just how many different types of paranormal evidence we've captured at Grapevine Farms. And this investigation we just did, and the video that just came out, shows something else I've always said about Grapevine, that the Grapevine Farm spirits, they have one way they love to communicate with us, and they prefer it. Like, we use Spirit Box, we don't get a ton. We use digital recorders, we don't get a ton. We fire up the Phasma Box, that's when they start talking. And a Phasma Box is a device that it allows spirits to manipulate chopped up sound bars, and it provides voices and interaction in real time. It's a similar concept to a Spirit Box, a bit different, but just, you know, to keep it simple, it's similar to how a Spirit Box works. And a lot of reverb, and you get a lot of voices, and you get a lot of weird sounds and gibberish sometimes, but man, do you get a lot of good evidence from it. And this, the Phasma Box has actually proven itself so many times, where we will capture a voice coming through the Phasma Box in real time, and then, you know, within 10 seconds, one of our cameras, either the one we're holding or one nearby, will capture an EVP, an electronic voice phenomena, of the same word. And that's validation. When one piece of equipment validates the other, when they capture the same evidence in basically the same amount of time, for us, that means a piece of equipment is legit. And the Phasma Box is legit. And the spirits at Grapevine Farms absolutely love it. Which is good, because for the longest time when Tim started investigating, it was the only thing he wanted to use. Although he has come around on the spirit box, because we've gotten some really good spirit box stuff lately. But so the Phasma Box evidence, there's a lot of it in that investigation. And one of the things, if you're watching that investigation, to note is how intelligent these spirits are. There's two basic kind of haunts. There's different degrees of these two categories, but there's two basic kinds: intelligent and residual. Residual hauntings play on a tape over and over again. They have no care of you. They don't probably even notice you. They just kind of happen. It just plays over and over and over again. A lot of battlefield spirits are residual. They're just doing the same thing all the time. They have no awareness of you. Intelligent spirits do have awareness of you. They'll answer your questions. They'll comment on you. Sometimes they'll make fun of you. It happens. I've been called Baldy by a ton of spirits we've investigated. So the spirits at Grapevine are really intelligent. And in this episode, it really shows. We capture, just stuff that is so relevant to the location. If you saw any of our stuff from Hyde Hall, the folks at Hyde spoke French and English, and if we speak French to the Phasma Box there, it will speak French back to us. That doesn't happen anywhere else, because the spirits don't speak French in most places. We had an experience recently where Russian words were coming back. Where we were investigating was a heavy Russian-occupied area. A lot of Russian immigrants, a lot of Russian Orthodox up that way when where we were was at its peak. So those are interesting things, but the Phasma, it just reacts so intelligently. And there's a couple pieces of evidence in there that really prove it. The first, and one of my favorite of maybe of all time from the Phasma Box, is the Phasma Box asking about Tracy coming back. Tracy had been gone for 2 weeks and came back about 2 hours before we started investigating. And to have a spirit say, Tracy going to come back, is incredibly relevant. They noticed she wasn't there. Of course they did. You would notice if somebody that you lived with every day wasn't there. And they do too, because paranormal activity happens all the time. But to get that full sentence about that, such a specific thing and comment about it. Of course it says Emily, it says Tim a lot. The other thing that I'm finding that's starting to happen with the Grapevine Farm spirits is they seem to be getting quicker. Because sometimes when we investigate, we ask a question and then we leave plenty of time of silence for an answer, whether it be in a camera, digital recorder, spirit box, or Phasma Box, or whatever we're using. The spirits of Grapevine are getting quicker. And that is something that will happen. Spirits do learn how to use the equipment after a while. It's another reason I say we always get more evidence on a second investigation than a first, because, spirits, they have to learn how to interact with a lot of this stuff, especially if it's in a place where they've never had the ability to do any of it. But there was an incident that happened. I was in the hallway doing some experiments and doing some motion sensing stuff with the children, trying to get a reaction. And for some reason, my phone just started playing some video off of some app. I have no idea why, but it was like somebody yelling at someone about being in their neighborhood. It was like a 4-second clip. And Tracy and Emily in the other room said, "What the heck was that?" And I just started laughing. I'm like, "Yeah, my phone just started playing a video." 2 seconds later, the Phasma Box in the room with Emily and Tracy says, "That's funny." And that's quick. And actually, to piggyback off of that, we just did an event at Grapevine this weekend, and something very similar happened, where somebody did something or said something. I don't remember the exact circumstance, but it was funny, and we picked up laughter through the Phasma Box. So the spirits of Grapevine, very intelligent. They love the Phasma Box, and they are becoming very quick at using it. And that video is worth checking out, because, every time we go there, it just enhances the story. And of course, we always leave with more questions than we came in with. That's what makes paranormal investigating so addictive, is because that happens every time. But a great location. And the best part about a place like that is you're coming back. so you can investigate it in a way that this is just another one in a series. Because as paranormal investigators, you're trying to forward the narrative. You're trying to understand the spirits. You're trying to make their story be told. And that's why we go back places, because we want to keep that story going. We want to give the spirits a chance to say what they want. And we don't know how spiritual energy works. And sometimes they talk more and sometimes they talk less. And if I knew the answer as to why that is, I could write a book and retire. But I do not know. Nobody knows. And that's, again, one of the reasons why this field is so interesting and so addictive, because we can never know. But the more you go to a place, the more you feel like you know the spirits. And Grapevine Farms, we know the spirits know us, and it is like visiting old friends. Speaking of Grapevine, we are still in October. We are still in our event season, and we had a couple of great events there on Saturday. If you are in the Cobleskill, New York area, there are some limited spots available for our two events on October 28th, one at 5:30 and one at 8:30. And you can call 518-234-9148 to reserve a spot there at that event, or go on and get more details on Grapevine Farms' Facebook page or our Facebook page, because we're linked to that event. If you're in that area, we'd love to see you. We had a lot of fun with some really cool folks this weekend who came out to get a real investigative experience. And the locations don't always cooperate for these events, but I think the people who came on last weekend got their money's worth. The joint was jumping, and there was some pretty cool stuff that happened. We also have another event happening shortly after Halloween, November 3rd and 4th. We're at the Finger Lakes Community Action building. If you are in the Lyons, New York area, or like Seneca Falls or Rochester, New York, come out and see us there. Again, two events on the 3rd, two on the 4th, 5 to 8, 9 to 12. And you can go on Finger Lakes Community Actions for that link. You can go on our Facebook page. I posted the link a couple of days ago. And something interesting we're doing there, they're doing a raffle where we're giving away some Orange County, New York paranormal swag. But also in the raffle, we are raffling off the chance to participate in an actual investigation with us in that area next year. It's not something we normally do, but it's for charity and Finger Lakes Community Action. They help so many people that we're willing to do, you know, not only the event, but we're also willing to try and raise money. If you can't get to the event, but you want to look into perhaps purchasing a ticket, it is in the link that's on our Facebook page. I will also link that at the end of the description of the episode, because you don't have to live in Lyons, New York. If you're anywhere in New York, and according to our statistics, about 35% of the downloads we get on this podcast are from New York. If you live in, you know, Albany, New York, and you want to buy a ticket, we investigate all over the state. So you don't have to live in that area to win. We want to raise as much money as possible for a great cause with Finger Lakes Community Action, because all proceeds, as always, all proceeds of anything we do go toward the location. We do not charge for anything, whether it be investigations or events. And October's great for us because this is our chance to not only have fun, but to also give back to locations who've been so good to us. So please support them in any way you can, whether it be to buy a ticket or to the event, or to join the raffle if you're interested. We appreciate anything anybody does, because it's going to a good cause. So we'll continue to enjoy our October, and I hope all of you do as well. And, you know, what we do, while always fascinating, it does have its moments that are scary. And, you know, the moments come and go, but the memory and the imprint that those moments leave on you, they are permanent and they're precious. And I cherish the moments that we have been scared. They become part of you. They become part of the journey. And while not as dramatic as paranormal television shows or horror movies, heart-pounding moments during an investigation, they're perfectly normal. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we'll catch you next time on the Paranormal Podcast.